We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 10, entitled Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, text number 27. Aho Bhatasva Yasasaktiraskari.
Aho Bhatasva Yasasaktiraskari.
Kushasta Vipunya Yasaskari Bhuva.
Kushasta Vipunya Yasaskari Bhuva.
Asyanti nityam yat anugrahisitam.
Asyanti nityam yat anugrahisitam.
Smitavalokam swapatim smayat praja.
Smitavalokam swapatim smayat praja.
Aho bata.
Aho bata.
How wonderful is this?
How wonderful is this?
Svayasasa. The glories of the heavenly planets.
The glories of the heavenly planets.
Tiraskari.
Tiraskari.
That which defeats.
That which defeats.
Kushastari.
Kushastari.
Dwarka.
Dwarka.
Punya.
Punya.
Virtue.
Virtue.
Yashaskari.
Yashaskari.
Famous.
Famous.
Bhuvaha.
Bhuvaha.
Planet Earth.
The planet Earth.
Pasyanti.
Pasyanti.
Sea.
Nitya,
constantly.
Constantly.
Ya,
that.
That which.
That which.
Anugrahaisitam.
Anugrahaisitam.
To bestow benediction.
To bestow benediction.
Smita avalokam.
Smita avalokam.
Glance with the favor of sweet smiling.
Glance with the favor of sweet smiling.
Svapatim.
Svapatim.
Unto the soul of the living being.
Unto the soul of the living being.
Krishna.
Krishna.
Sma.
Sma.
Used to.
Used to.
Yet prajaha.
Yet prajaha.
The inhabitants of the place.
The inhabitants of the place.
Translation. Undoubtedly, it is wonderful that Dwarka has defeated the glories of the heavenly planets and has enhanced the celebrity of the earth. The inhabitants of Dwarka are always seeing the soul of all living beings, Krishna, in his loving feature. He glances at them and favors them with sweet smiles. Purport. The heavenly planets are inhabited by demigods like Indra, Chandra, Varuna, and Vayu, and the pious souls reach there after performance of many virtuous acts on earth. Modern scientists agree that the timing arrangement in the higher planetary systems is different from that of the earth. Thus it is understood from the revealed scriptures that the duration of life there is 10,000 years by our calculation. 6 months on earth is equal to 1 day on the heavenly planets. Facilities of enjoyment are also similarly enhanced, and the beauty of the inhabitants is legendary. Common men on earth are very much fond of reaching the heavenly planets because they have heard that the comforts of life are far greater there than on the earth. They are now trying to reach the moon by spacecraft. Considering all this, the heavenly planets are more celebrated than the earth. But the celebrity of earth has defeated that of the heavenly planets because of Dwarka, where Lord Sri Krishna reigned as king. 3 places, namely Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, are more important than the famous planets within the universe. These places are perpetually sanctified because whenever the Lord descends on earth, he displays his transcendental activities, particularly in these 3 places. They are perpetually the holy lands of the Lord, and the inhabitants still take advantage of the holy places, even though the Lord is now out of their sight. The Lord is the soul of all living beings, and he desires always to have all the living beings in their sarup, in their constitutional position, to participate in transcendental life in his association. His attractive features and sweet smiles go deep into the heart of everyone, and once it is so done, the living being is admitted into the kingdom of God, from which no one returns. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The heavenly planets may be very famous for offering better facilities of material enjoyment, but as we learn from the Bhagavad Gita 9, 20 and 21, one has to come back again to the earth planet as soon as the acquired virtue is finished. Dwarka is certainly more important than the heavenly planets, because whoever has been favored with the smiling glance of the Lord shall never come back again to this rotten earth, which is certified by the Lord himself as a place of misery. Not only this earth, but also all the planets of the universes are places of misery, because in none of the planets within the universe is there eternal life, eternal bliss, and eternal knowledge. Any person engaged in the devotional service of the Lord is recommended to live in one of the above-mentioned three places, namely Dwarka, Mathura, or Vrindavan. Because devotional service in these three places is magnified, those who go there to follow the principles in terms of instructions imparted in the revealed scriptures surely achieve the same result as obtained during the presence of Lord Sri Krishna. His abode and he himself are identical, and a pure devotee under the guidance of another experienced devotee can obtain all the results even at present. So Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. And of course at present we are in Vrindavan, because there is no difference between Mayapur and Vrindavan. And in the same way, there is no difference between Jagannath Puri and Dwarka. And the Gundicha gardens, the gardens of the Gundicha temple, are described to be Vrindavan, right? Somehow or other. So all these amazing feats are manifest by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How wonderful is the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he never leaves his devotee. Even when the devotee turns away from the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lord remains with him all along in the form of Paramatma. And even for those devotees who have turned away from the Lord is making many, many arrangements. He has, in so many places, he has manifested his deity form. So many deities are there all over the universe. Some of these deities are self-manifest. Some deities are found. And there are scriptures throughout the universe. It is said that the Ganges is carrying the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna throughout the whole universe, and in this way glorifying Krishna wherever it goes. Right? So this is the nature of the spiritual world, the constant glorification of the Supreme Lord. There where the glorification of the Supreme Lord is going on, there is the spiritual world. Naham tisthami vaikunte. It is said that I'm not residing in Vaikuntha. Mat gayanti mat bhakta. I am there where my devotees are chanting Narada Muni, my glories, Narada Muni is saying. Also it said, ye dina griyate bhajana deki griyate goloka maya. So that day when one is chanting bhajans in one's house, then the house becomes transformed into Vrindavan. In this way, the spiritual world manifests wherever the glorification of the Lord is going on. And therefore Prabhupada says many times that when the Sankirtan movement will spread and gradually change the entire world, and when everyone on the planet becomes caught up in glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly, 24 hours a day, so then this planet will be no different from Vaikuntha. The whole planet will become like Vaikuntha. So, how potent is the glorification of Krishna? How wonderful is it? Because it can transform the material world into Vaikuntha, this rotten earth, Srila Prabhupada says. And that obviously is a fact. It is a rotten earth. What a strange universe it is. Jivo jivasya jivanam, where one living entity is food for another. How can it work when constitutionally that problem is there, that one living entity is food for another? Even a vegetarian goes out into the garden with a big chopping knife behind his back and sneaks upon an innocent cauliflower and just decapitates him right there on the spot. Right? What to do? Even vegetarians have to rip innocent plants out of the ground, just like that. Murder them brutally. Right? Hungry. What to do? Some suck, you know, little suck. Finished is the suck. Right? No more. Of course, it is stated that suck is the most fortunate preparation. And I like that very much, that preparations can be fortunate. So, the brutal nature of the material world, where there is so much suffering, can so easily be transformed. I'll give a few more examples about the material world. Some years ago, I was in Radhadesh with the devotees from Radhadesh going on an excursion to Scandinavia. And, you know, we're doing visiting the different temples of Scandinavia. So the tour operator thought to get everyone in the mood to show videos of polar bears and penguins and all these things. Right? So all the way we were watching these videos. You know. And at one point there's these little penguins. There are these little penguins that that come out of the egg, and they're on the slippery ice on their big flat feet, coming out, doing their first steps. And because these feet are kind of like skis, you know, they're very soon getting it down, sliding, right? Just like kids in the school, you know. So they're all sliding, and the ice was sliding down towards the ocean. So all the little penguins, hundreds of them, all sliding down in a group too, and then off the edge of the ice just to dive into the ocean. And just then this huge killer whale came out of nowhere, opens his mouth and swallowed them all. This rotten earth. Yeah. What can we say? This rotten earth. So we should not be in illusion about the material world. The material world is, there is no happy end. There is no happy end. It always ends with suffering. And the suffering can sometimes be prolonged, sometimes be very quick. When you crash with your car into the tree, it's relatively quick when you're being squashed right there. That goes relatively fast. A little anxiety, a little intense pain, and then already out of the body. There are other cases where someone can rot on his deathbed for years, and slowly, slowly disintegrate in great pain and suffering. This rotten material world. Did you realize that in the Middle Ages, 1/3 of the world population died of the Black Plague? 1/3. Serious. So, just some statistics and some illustrations to expand on the rotten earth. But we see that Krishna is simply giving us the suffering to bring us to the point of surrender to Him. Therefore, the suffering is ultimately another symptom of the love of the Supreme Lord, who tries to rectify the foolish conditioned souls who again and again fall prey by the illusory energy and who try to enjoy the material world. The fools, namely ourselves. Again and again the material energy looks so attractive and we get bewildered by the sense objects. Rupa, rasa, gandha, sparsa, sabda, form, taste, touch, sound, and smell. But the constant glorification of the Supreme Lord can save us. Because the constant glorification of the Supreme Lord will manifest the presence of the Supreme Lord. Within the glorification, the Lord is present. After all, nama chintamani krishna chaitanya rasa vigraha purna sudha nityamukto avinatvam namanamino. Lord Krishna is non different from his name, and therefore wherever his name is chanted, then Krishna is present in his full potency. Nija sarva shakti, all his full potencies, everything is there. So certainly also Krishna's abode, because when Krishna travels, he brings his luggage. Everyone brings his luggage when they travel. And our problem is that you cannot bring everything you want to. You have to always make a choice. Like, I wish I could take my whole library, all my books, wherever I travel around the world, I wish I could just carry them all with me. And we know that some great scholars used to. They had a whole caravan of animals carrying the library, elephants and so many things. We see some great pandits, Keshava Kashmiri Pandit and other great pandits were all carrying these books with them. But we cannot. How much can we take? But when Krishna comes to the material world, Krishna takes everything with him. He doesn't come with a suitcase. He just takes the whole spiritual world. He takes all his associates, everything comes, everything is present. So wherever there is Krishna, there is the spiritual world, there are his associates, and in this way, the spiritual world is manifest in the material world. And because the spiritual world is eternal by nature, it cannot be unmanifest. Once it's manifest, it is eternally manifest, because that is the nature of the spiritual world. Therefore, it is stated that these places, Mathura, Dwarka, Vrindavan, Jagannath Puri, Sridhar Mayapur, that all these places are eternal. Someone is then thinking, well, what happens then at the annihilation? You know, will Mayapur just stay and it just stops then at the edge of the dam and everything else is gone? Not exactly like that. But somehow or other, in some realm, these dams will be present. How? I don't know. I don't have the adhikar. Because it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that just as there are different birds flying on different levels in the sky, in the same way there are different Vaishnavas who are on different levels of realizations about the nature of Krishna. And in my case, I cannot claim much adhikar, not much ability to fly. In fact, there are some birds who don't even fly. Some birds are just walking, we have seen. Like chickens, they walk and then flap a little with their wings. But by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, this chicken is flying. Right? So I'm a flying chicken. But still not very elegant. So therefore, I cannot say much about these dams or their transcendental nature. But still, we appreciate the philosophical point. The philosophical point we can understand. Philosophy is one thing we can understand. We can understand that these dharmas are no different from the spiritual sky. That we can understand. Exactly how is more difficult. Alright, we also understand that actually the dharmas are covered by a layer of the yoga maya energy of Krishna, and therefore appear to be an Indian village. But one who has the proper transcendental vision can actually see these dharmas in full opulences. Like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave a description of Kesi Ghat and describes how the Ghat is like has golden steps which are studded with jewels and like that. He gives a very elaborate description. I did not see. So nice sense, though. And I saw the sewage, and I saw many things. But I did not see the studded jewels in the gold on the steps. So whatever we may see or may not see, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that some are able to directly perceive the kirtan in the house of Srivas. And they're directly able to hear that transcendental sound while being here in Sridharmayapur. Others are not. But they can hear the kirtan through the scriptures, and there is no difference. No difference. So this is the process for approaching the holy Dham for those who do not have the eyes to see, for approaching Krishna through the scriptures, Shastra Sakshus. Through the scriptures we will see. Through the disciplic succession we will see. Through the acharyas we will see. Through the mercy of the Vaishnavas we will see. We will not see with our eyes what can be said in this regards. But it does not matter. There is no difference. Of course, we have been discussing the nature of a Goswami in our Nectar of Devotion classes. Because in the preface of the Nectar of Devotion, there's that description of what Goswami is. And obviously, what is referred to there is a lot more than one who controls the senses. Go meaning senses and Swami meaning master. But rather, it is referring to the devotees who are Premamritambu Nidhi, who are deeply absorbed in an ocean of transcendental love of God, constantly overwhelmed. Just like we read in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after he took sannyas, began to manifest symptoms of love of God fully. Already, after he had gone to Gaya and met his spiritual master, Iswarapuri, Nimai Pandit changed. When before, Nimai Pandit was a great scholar in Nyaya and logic and so on. But when Nimai Pandit returned from Gaya, then Nimai Pandit had suddenly become a devotee. And he was an ecstatic devotee. And all the Vaishnavas said, how nice, Nimai has become a devotee. And they were all offering him blessings and allowed him to render service to them. Bhakta Nimai. But then, very soon, Nimai began to manifest more and more transcendental qualities, and very soon he revealed that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then all the Vaishnavas finally understood. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, for days he wandered without exactly understanding where he was going. He was walking away from the Ganges, actually wandering here and there, and it seemed that he had no sense of direction. But after some time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to ask for Vrindavan. And it was clear that actually all along he had the intention to go to Vrindavan. And he began to ask the way to Vrindavan, and we know that at one point Lord Nityananda took advantage of this, because when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting in such ecstasy, he felt somewhat disturbed that the people in the land of Radhadesh, where the Ganges doesn't flow, were not chanting. So he wanted to go back to the Ganges, and then he met these young boys. And these young boys, they were herding cows, and they were immediately chanting. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in great ecstasy to hear that chanting. And it is said that as he became ecstatic by hearing that chanting, he became overwhelmed by ecstatic symptoms, and tears were shooting from his eyes, and he was totally overwhelmed. So then Nityananda, while Lord Chaitanya was in great ecstasy, took advantage of that situation and went to the boys and said, you see that sannyasi? He's not really okay. And the boys looked at it, yeah. And he doesn't look. He looks at it, yeah. He's a bit strange. Yes, he's not okay. He will ask you the way to Vrindavan. You just tell him, follow the path along the Ganges. So the boys did. Yeah. Vrindavan?
Yes, yes.
Age, age, as they say in India. It's always age. Straight ahead. Wherever you go, it's always straight ahead. And then you ask the next person, and it's again, age, age, age. This way, you get sent along the path. So the same happened to Sri Chaitanya. Anyway, the very point is that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu displayed this extraordinary love of God, and that he was constantly chanting the name of the Lord. He was constantly crying great tears, and it was very difficult for him to walk. We also find similar descriptions about the associates of Lord Nityananda who were trying to go from Bengal, not from Jagannath Puri to Bengal to preach. It was the first Sankirtan party sent out by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the order to go and preach in Bengal. But it was very difficult for them because all the way they got into such an ecstatic kirtan that they forgot everything and then they missed a turn. And then they asked someone and they said, oh, the road, oh, that's behind. That's 6 kilometers back. Oh, oh, okay, no problem. They turn around. And then they missed the turn again. And sometimes it is said one devotee would just stand there. Ram Abhiram took the form of Krishna and stood like that for 9 hours in the Tribhanga Rupa, in that form, the three-band form. Just like Krishna with the legs crossed. And he stood like that in ecstasy for 9 hours. And the kirtan just stayed in that place in ecstasy for 9 hours. What can be said? We find such descriptions. We find many such descriptions. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find a description how during Sanam Yatra, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very, very overwhelmed. He became very, very eager because he knew that very soon we will not have the darshan of Lord Jagannath anymore. And then at the very end of Sanam Yatra, the singers began to sing one line of a song about separation of the Lord. And this was chanted for 6 hours, the same line. The same line was just chanted over and over for 6 hours. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just simply absorbed in that separation of the Supreme Lord. So in this way, we see how the Supreme Lord and his associates are not at all in this world. Oh, their bodies may be in this world, but it's not that they're trying to live a happy life like devotees. And now we're all devotees and we're gonna be happy and live a happy, happy life in our happy, happy Vaishnav homes and have happy, happy Vaishnav prasadam and happy, happy invitations, that everything is so nice and happy. That's not spiritual life. That's Mickey Mouse. That's Disney World. Everyone gets a balloon and everything is so happy. The material world is not happy. It's a rotten place. But the Vaishnava is not in the spiritual world, in the material world. He's totally in the spiritual world. He's living in the spiritual world. His body may be in the material world, and in the material world his body is going through all the onslaughts of material miseries. And that may be frustrating. That may be frustrating. Like personally, one thing I hate the most about the material world is that you can dream like the unlimited and that you can realize like, a tiny, tiny little bit. Right? here in the material world, that reality is always less than the dream. The only thing we see is the description in Srimad Bhagavatam, how Yudhisthira Maharaj fully satisfied all his dreams on this planet Earth by the grace of the Lord. It was possible. But ordinarily that cannot be achieved. But in the spiritual world, reality exceeds our dreams, like in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, and this is the nature of the spiritual world, where Lord Krishna does not just fulfill all desires of the devotee, but he even awakens new desires and fulfills those as well. Right? And in this way, desires we never knew we had, Krishna manages to bring them out of us, right? Eternally so, more and more. So the spiritual reality is truly unlimited, unlimited in experience. Before, as a devotee, I somehow or other got a Krishna book, right? And I had a problem with that book. Yeah, I had a problem. And the problem basically was that in every story there was a demon that appeared, and then 1, 2, 3, there was Krishna, and then 1, 2, 3, bang, demon dead. Yeah? So I was thinking, this book has no plot. Yeah? Nothing like Agatha Christie or something, you know, where you can't tolerate it any longer, you have to look at the last page. Who is the murderer, you know? You have to know it, right? And you bite your fingers in great anxiety. You can't go to sleep before you know who is the one. Right? So I'm saying this book has no plot. Krishna always wins, that's for sure. And he wins also immediately, right? So quick, you know, the fight's already over. Then when I first came to the temple, and I just gave up my cigarettes and I took the last deep puff before I decided to join, the final one, the biggest one, and I rang the doorbell and the temple door opened and I said, I want to join. I'm going to vote you. I got me in. I said, are you sure? I said, yes. And he said, please come in. And he made me sit on a chair and he said, here, read this magazine. It was a Back to Godhead. I said, oh, I already read that. He said, it doesn't matter. A devotee reads it again and again. So I sat down and started reading that same Back to Godhead. And I was reading and reading it. And then after about half an hour, that devotee came past again and I went like, I'm here. And he went, that's all right. So I just kept on following the first instruction. I kept on reading this Back to Godhead magazine. And somehow or other, this devotee never came back. I was sitting there the whole day. I came at 9 in the morning, and at 4 in the afternoon, I was still sitting there reading the Back to Godhead magazine. And I got a lot of realizations that day. A lot. Because I was reading it again and again, and I discovered more and more details in depth. And I began to realize that it wasn't just about reading something new every time, but that real, these pastimes of Krishna and these qualities of Krishna, you had to go in deep, began to dawn upon me. And then at 4 o'clock, the temple president said, who are you? You've been sitting here the whole day. I want to join. He said, really? And found out that I thought it was a test, you know, if they put you on the chair. I didn't realize what ISKCON was like. But anyhow, I got some mercy. I got some mercy right there from Krishna and from that devotee. And with that also, I began to slowly appreciate the Krishna book more with time. Although one thing I always was wondering, how is it that Krishna always performs these same pastimes? But it's the same thing. It doesn't matter, right? That there is another pastime of herding the cows and here, and that Krishna is again coming home and these things, because these pastimes are unlimitedly deep, and there is unlimited experience. In the spiritual world, everything is so deep. Everything is so meaningful. Here, everything is so meaningless, and we're constantly trying to add some meaning to it, right? What's the meaning of a smile? You know, nothing. Put a jewel in there, right? Take out one tooth and put a big jewel in there just to make it a little more meaningful, right? Have a facelift or whatever you can, you know. Add something to your smile, you know. Please, you know. You're tired of that same old smile, right? That's material. Right, those yellow teeth, you know, keep on brushing them, right? Material life. But in the spiritual world, everything is meaningful, because a smile is not an expression of hypocrisy, as it is here, you know, politeness. Oh, how nice of you to come. Do come in. Welcome. Yes, yes, no, please come in. I hope they're not going to stay long. Yes, sit down. They always come at dinner time. Oh, how nice you came. We're eating out tonight. Different ways, you know, of like all false hypocrisy. Right? But the spiritual world is not a world of hypocrisy, a world of emptiness, a world of showbiz, and a world of exploitation, and a world of hidden agenda. The spiritual world is the world which everything is totally genuine, everything is totally meaningful, everything is full of love. So this is what we have been discussing the last few days with the ladies on the roof of the palaces, or the brahmanas that were glorifying Krishna. We have been hearing how deeply absorbed they were and how meaningful everything was to them. So much so, it is said that the ladies in Mathura, when they rush to the roof when Krishna is walking through the streets and they don't even put on their clothes properly and so on, they are just overwhelmed. So this eagerness is the quality. It's not a matter just that we are doing it, but it is very much a matter of how we are doing it and how much we apply ourselves in the service of Krishna. It can be done. We can advance very quickly, by very enthusiastically, and with great enthusiasm, engaging ourselves in devotional service. That enthusiasm is the key that adds life. And whenever we are engaging in our devotional service with so much enthusiasm, then automatically, will get so much enlivened. And taste is needed. Also, it's unavoidable that I remember some points of the nectar devotion, because I eat, drink, sleep, speak day and night, nectar of devotion practically. Even in my dream, I'm giving nectar of devotion class. It's nectar of devotion all the way. It's very nice. So, one of the big points in the nectar of devotion is that without taste, it's not possible to really practice devotional service. We may practice devotional service dutifully, but sooner or later we're going to fail in our duty. If it's all just duty, then we're going to have weak moments. We're going to have days that we're just not going to apply ourselves as much as other days, if it's all duty. Therefore, on duty alone, one can never perfectly serve Krishna. It's not possible. Perfect service to Krishna only can be done when it's done on the strength of taste. So therefore, enthusiasm is one of the qualities that relates to this taste. So we have to apply a lot of enthusiasm. And in this regard, I always with great pleasure remember the story of Vishnujan, who was asked, Vishnujan, you are always so enthusiastic in kirtan. How is it that you're always so enthusiastic in kirtan? And Vishnujan said, actually, I'm not always enthusiastic in kirtan, but I just act enthusiastic. And that makes the devotees enthusiastic, and that makes me enthusiastic. So here we see how in the how in the association of devotees this enthusiasm is there. And it's a fact. We see a little circle and one devotee starts to step to the middle and then we think, I can do that also. And we join in. In this way, the Sankirtan movement works contagious. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in this way, spread Krishna conscious by his contagious ecstasy. And therefore we pray to be always in the association of the devotees who are enthusiastically and ecstatically serving the Supreme Lord. Because we know that in the association of such devotees, maybe even we who have stone-like hearts will also gradually develop a little bit of enthusiasm. It may take some time. In the beginning we stand there and think, I think it's overdone. I think it's exaggerated, I think it's artificial. But gradually it will melt us also. Maybe I try. One step. One little step. So in this way, gradually we become conquered by the enthusiasm that the devotees display in their devotional service. And therefore the holy dhammas are so wonderful, because that we can see. We may not be able to see Krishna here in the holy dhamma, but we can see with how gorgeously, how opulently, and with how much enthusiasm and fervor Krishna is being glorified in the holy dhamma. And that you will not find anywhere else. Such glorification you will not find. Somehow or other in the dham, that's possible. Everyone cooperates and does it. And it's amazing what kind of worship of Krishna can be done. And therefore to drown ourselves in these oceans of glorification of Krishna is exactly what will transfer us to the consciousness of the spiritual world. And then wherever we go, we will be in the spiritual world. And therefore, staying in the holy dhamma is one of the most valuable items of devotional service, which even if performed a little, can so quickly give one love of God. Therefore, whenever we have the opportunity, we should stay here and don't worry about it. Although, there is one place, and that's the last sentence that I'll say, there is one place that is higher than the holy dhamma. And that is the Prabhupada Pradesh, the place where one is sent upon the order of one's spiritual master. That is still higher. But if the spiritual master allows us, invites us to spend time in the Dhamma, go for it. Because the Dhamma is an amazing mercy manifestation. It is just an amazing manifestation of Krishna's mercy. It's just inconceivable. How great is mercy? Inconceivable. What can I say? I'm dumbfounded. So any questions? Any comments?
Yes. Alright, in this rat world, if we take up devotional service, the first characteristic is kleshagun. And it's not the Mickey Mouse Club. But then how do we understand when we go through distresses, actually plugging in as best we can to the sadhana practices? How do we understand these heavy things?
That then come to the Bhakti Shastri class. Huh?
Just check it out.
Which means students. Anybody else? Anybody out there? My God, we're going to go over this.
The seeds of sin. The seeds of sin.
Okay, somewhere the seeds of sin. Yeah.
That's where the spiritual manifestation of our karma reactions. So.
Yes. Maharaj, of course, could teach the course himself. And then Yes, so the different stages that karmic reactions manifest themselves. So therefore, it is explained that we are still getting some diminished karmic reactions, but they will all be destroyed by the process of devotional service. Still, when one saw how much Srila Prabhupada had to suffer physically in his final days, it's heartbreaking. I still cannot watch that video of Prabhupada's disappearance. I have not seen it, actually. I haven't seen it. I'm just one of those people. I don't want to see it. I can't watch it. I've seen some pictures there, but I have it even, but I never look at it. I don't want to see it. Even in the Samadhi Museum, I don't like that lost diorama upstairs, although I was involved in making that museum. To see Prabhupada going through so much suffering is painful. Still, we understand that he was transcendental to it, that it did not in any way affect his relationship with Krishna. But at the same time, it was also frustrating that there were bodily limitations, and that old age brought certain limitations with it. Prabhupada certainly didn't like that. When there was a twitch in his face, he didn't like that at one point. It disturbed him. But Prabhupada saw everything from a transcendental point of view. When there was ringing in his ears, then he thought this was very nice, because he always wanted to give up sleep. And said, and with that ringing in his ears, there was no chance to sleep. So he thought it was very good. Very transcendental. So the devotee is not disturbed in his relationship with Krishna. And that is where he is transcendental. The body is made of the material energy, and the body will break down, and it is just under the laws of material nature. And this, the sat avikar, the six transformations coming into being, and etc., etc., and gradually dwindling and ceasing to exist, will also have to happen to a Vaishnava. Even Madhavendra Puri was paralyzed at his old age and had to be served by his disciples lying in his own stool and so on. And that's Madhavendra Puri, who was described as like the most ecstatic devotee. There was no devotee like Madhavendra Puri. So it's sometimes quite amazing to see how Vaishnavas are suffering, apparently, and even liberated Vaishnavas, what to speak. So not just the fan that is still spinning. And one can say, yes, that is the liberated souls, they're suffering due to their disciples. Yes, that is true, but at the same time, there is inherent suffering for the body. Yeah? It's like disciples or no disciples, everyone gets old and everyone will face the debilitating effect of old age. So Vaishnavas, even liberated Vaishnavas, also will face these things, but it doesn't affect them in consciousness. Their relationship with Krishna is undisturbed. That's the essence. And the Vaishnava who is not liberated, for him there is Tatenu Kampam Susanik Samano Bhujane Vatnapitam Vipago Nikmakapuru Dev Viladan Namaste Vimukti Pade Sadaya Bhak, which basically means that by tolerating all these sufferings, one becomes an eligible candidate to receive the mercy of Krishna. Srila Bhagavatam 12th canto. Any other question?
I stand for also one program for Krishna, but yesterday I couldn't be concerned, can go on wonderful, you know. I stay thinking, what is my duty, you know? Go to this program, Ask for
what?
To be devotee forgiveness.
Why it's going to the program and asking? I can't understand why it's one or the other. Why not both?
This program is outside.
So you have no time.
Go to the program.
And write a note to the devotee. Little note, little letter, una carta. Tu puoi scrivere una pequeña carta alla devotee. Something like that, you know. Anyway, it doesn't matter whether you first go to the preaching program or whether you afterwards ask for forgiveness or whether you send a little note now. Whatever you do, you should apologize to that devotee, for sure. And you should also go on the preaching program. So whatever is practical. We always make offenses. What can we do? We are in practice. We are not experienced as devotees and only aspiring to become devotees. We make so many mistakes. It's something like, when I was a kid, my mother used to read this fairy tale about two sisters. And one sister, when she would speak, roses would come from her mouth. And the other sister, when she would speak, frogs would come from the mouth. Yeah? So the problem with a frog is when a frog jumps from your mouth, you kind of put it back inside, right? And it's like, and then that frog on its own bounces around. So many times. It happens again and again, right? That just inadvertently a frog jumps out of my mouth. I shouldn't have said that. So then it's appropriate to apologize.
Very specific. I cannot preach because I was very offensive.
Lord Chaitanya will help you to preach. You cannot preach anyway, whether you can become offensive or not. Even if you are behaving perfectly saintly, still you cannot preach. You can only preach if you pray to Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya and try to repeat what you have learned. We cannot preach. What is our shakti to preach? Whether we make offenses today or whether we make all the offenses before. Preaching we cannot. Okay, time's up.
Is there only the Esperanto Canada for me?